Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors because we don't need any sponsors. And we help focus you on the events of the week. Should we just get right to it? I suppose. I do have an update on the Bird Whisperer. Very, very strange and interesting and fascinating activity surrounding the Bird Whisperer. We'll get to some of that. But I want to start with my irrational fear of hail. Yeah, I have an irrational fear of hail. I've got a story here from AccuWeather. AccuWeather, that's right. Accurate weather, I think, is what they're going for with that. Accurate weather. Monster hail is what they're calling it. Fell out of the sky this past Tuesday. Meteorologist Reed Timmer warned that Colorado's state hail record could be in jeopardy. That's right. Now, the record for the largest ball of ice to ever hit the ground in the state of Colorado was 4.5 inches in diameter. 4.5 inches, yes. Now, that record has been tied 20 times since people started keeping track of such things, which I was not involved in keeping track, but I got my eye on it now. So 20 times in Colorado, we've had 4.5-inch hailstones hit the ground and be confirmed by professionals. Well, meteorologist Reed Timmer's prediction or warning came true when the hailstone that landed out in the eastern plains of Colorado was measured at 4.83 inches. It's a new record, and the crowd went wild. It's a new record. Yeah, this one punched a hole through, just about anything it hit. 4.5 inches, and it weighed half a pound. A little over half a pound. Traveling at approximately 120 miles an hour, that's dangerous. Now, the national record-setting hailstone, which we're all on the edge of our seat right now, right? What is the record for the entire nation? Listen to this. The hailstone was discovered in Vivian, North Dakota, measuring 8 inches in diameter, 18.5 inches in circumference, and weighing just under 2 pounds. Yeah, they found it. It punched a hole through a deck. It went right through a deck. And it was recovered. So maybe my fear of hail is not all that irrational. Not that irrational. Maybe it's just a little exaggerated. Maybe it's slightly unhealthy, but it's not really irrational. That's from the Sky is Falling file. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There we go. Meanwhile, while all of that's going on, the hailstones are falling to the ground. I have a irrational fear of Islamic terrorists, but that's not very irrational. I was just reading an ISIS terrorist blew him up in Kabul, Afghanistan, at a wedding where about 1,200 people were attending a wedding. At least 63 were killed by this terrorist who blew himself up. And here's what struck me as noteworthy, I suppose. The Taliban condemned the ISIS terrorist attack. So, I mean, just let this sink in. Who would have ever thought that America would be negotiating with the Taliban to stop the mad dog terrorists? It just seems like I'm in a bizarro, upside down, backwards world. Now the Taliban comes across as the rational side. So, things have gotten pretty bad when the Taliban looks like your best option for avoiding terrorism in Afghanistan and, of course, coming out of Afghanistan. Things have definitely devolved to a lower state of affairs than they were, before September 11th, 2001, that's for sure. It's just bizarre. 63 dead so far. So the report I read said this guy went to the middle of the room in, while people were dancing. It was the dancing portion of the wedding. And detonated himself right in the middle of the main hall, full of people. Astonishing. ISIS, that is. The Islamic State now making the Taliban look reasonable. Meanwhile, the Taliban does not run California. But it seems like almost no one is running California. California is on autopilot. That was set. The autopilot was dialed in by a mentally deranged homosexual pervert socialist wacko hippie type. And then that hippie went to sleep after that. California's just, the rudder is just sputtering around out there. They're in the midst of what they're calling a defecation crisis.
Oh, gosh.
That's right. It's now officially a defecation crisis. A story here from the Wall Street Journal says the majority of America's homeless people now live in California. So more than half of all the homeless in the whole country live in California. Why? Because the weather is nice. That's the main thing. They won't freeze or boil in most of the places in California, at least on the coast. And the Wall Street Journal reminds us that fastidious attention is paid to the social duty of scooping up and disposing of dog feces. That's right. But there's a more paralyzed and guilty reaction to the plague of human feces.
Ew.
That's right. The poop the poop crisis is man-made, so to speak. This is a man-made crisis. Anyway, there's an app you can download on your phone if you're in San Francisco. Next time you go to San Francisco, be sure to download Snapcrap. It's an app for your smartphone that allows you to upload a photo directly to the governing officials in San Francisco, and then they will dispatch one of their five-person poop patrol. And they follow up on the offending specimen there. Not sure if they scoop it up or what do they do with it. Do they just log it in? Yep, sure enough, there it is. I'm not sure. I am not sure what that is all about. What else? Oh, so people are so guilt-ridden, these rich liberals, they're so guilt-ridden, they don't even want to tell people, look, you can't defecate in the streets. I mean, if you don't have that much self-assurance to be sure that you're in the right when you tell someone, hey, you cannot defecate in the middle of the street. If you don't have enough self-assurance to believe that you're in the right about that, then you probably need to be in a mental institution, which is where I think most of the people running California need to be. The Wall Street Journal reminds us that public property used to belong to the public, to everyone, and it couldn't be privatized for the benefit of one or more vagrants. Vagrants, they call them. They call them vagrants. That's right. The Wall Street Journal says no matter how poor or sick a vagrant is, he does not have the right to take possession of public property like a sidewalk and use it for a toilet. But that's what's happening. Here's another good one from the Wall Street Journal. They say traditional people respond to seeing someone defecating in the street. Here's what a traditional response would be. Quote, "What is wrong with these people?" Unquote. Now, a more progressive response would be, quote, "Why hasn't the government designed a program to solve this?" Unquote. So I'm going with the first one. What's wrong with these people? That's me. I'm traditional, I guess. Why hasn't the government designed a program to solve this? That wouldn't even been in the top 100 of my responses to watching someone defecate in the street. Although it kind of does remind me of the government now that I stop and think about it. I think I might have a hybrid response. What is wrong with this government? People are defecating in the street freely. And they also, the Wall Street Journal author also reminds us that homeless was originally an adjective. Let that one sink in. homeless was originally an adjective, but it became a collective noun somewhere along the way. And they're right about that. And I remember when it happened. I believe it was during the Reagan administration, when all the leftists and the socialists and the queers and the perverts and the weirdos wanted to disparage Ronald Reagan. They would talk about the homelessness crisis and the homeless. And then the homeless became a noun. And that was the people Ronald Reagan hated. Yeah, that was the homeless. So anyway, there is a defecation crisis going on in California. And, there's not one in most third world countries. In fact, I bet there's not a defecation crisis in any third world country on the planet. But there is one in California, which that says something about the state of affairs in California.
Mumbai.
You know what? I don't think they poop in the street. They have.
They do in the.
I think they
subway.
Just they go right into the bay there.
The bay?
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, there might be. Okay, so maybe California is on par with some third world countries areas. Okay, so but you would have thought that California would be past the whole defecation. You'd think they'd have that all figured out. How to keep control of the feces? I mean, that's like rung one on the ladder of civilization. We figured out what to do with our feces. But they've somehow lost control of that basic function of government there in California. It's actually pretty embarrassing for the poor people out there. All right. And I do want to go to, let's see, maybe it's the opioid crisis. Maybe when you're so high on opioids, maybe you don't even realize where you're defecating, or maybe you just don't care. Anyway, I was watching a news article on the opioid crisis, and the commentator was going after these drug companies saying, look, they're manufacturing all these opium pills, all these opioids. You know, obviously they're guilty of oversupply. And I'm just not so sure that we can say that about the drug companies that make all the opioid pills. I'm just not sure. I think the thing with drugs is, demand is the problem. It's demand. It's so many people wanting to escape reality. And I don't know, shut off the pain of life. I mean, you got too many people wanting to get high. And maybe if you're a drug company and you're cranking out opioid pills, I mean, people within the drug companies, they may never have seen the trends that look so obvious forensically. When we look back, we go through the records. You know, obviously we can see the pattern, but I think it's totally possible they didn't really understand the magnitude of the problem. I'm sure they do now. What with the feces piling up right alongside all the dead bodies. But I just don't know that we can hold these drug companies criminally liable. I'm just not sure about that. I'm open to the discussion. Pornography, on the other hand, is different. See, with pornography, supply is the problem. So, yes, if pornography is just sitting around, it's dangerous. And it has no legitimate use. With opioids, you can help someone who just broke their arm, prevent them from going into shock and maybe dying by killing the pain. So it's a legitimate medicine when used properly. Pornography, on the other hand, has no legitimate use, and it doesn't do any good ever. So with pornography, supply is the problem. It only does bad. Mm-hmm. Right. It only harms. And so that's why pornography should be illegal and opium should be a controlled substance, I guess. Anyway, how did I get off on that? Oh, yeah, the feces crisis. Speaking of feces, how often do you open a sentence with that? Speaking of feces, did you hear about Don Lemon? There's a credible accusation against Don Lemon. I was not going to cover this story because you never know when it's just some guy who's trying to shake a celebrity down for money, right? So I wasn't going to cover the story until I heard an interview with the lawyer of the guy suing Don Lemon for, well, I don't even want to go into what Don Lemon did. It's so nasty. How does somebody even think to do something like that? I mean, where does Where does a behavior like that have its genesis? I mean, I just don't understand. Anyway, I wasn't going to touch on the story, although everyone knows I'm no fan of Don Lemon. I hate Don Lemon. What do we call him here? Lemon scented?
No.
Oh, now we can't say that anymore. Uh-oh, sorry about that. So anyway, I heard an interview with with a lawyer of the gentleman suing Don Lemon for what Don Lemon did to him in a bar. By the way, it wasn't a gay bar. It was a regular bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was a regular bar, which Don goes into sometimes when he just wants to get drunk and obnoxious. And he's not necessarily cruising the place. Anyway, I heard this interview with the lawyer, and the lawyer says it's a very credible accusation and that he has eyewitnesses. That's right. He says one eyewitness has come forward and will testify. And he says there may be other eyewitnesses and maybe some nose witnesses from what we understand. That's gratuitous. By the way, that's not even my joke. I stole that from my extremely attractive audio engineer. That was her bit. I said eyewitnesses and she. Anyway, so this will be interesting to find out if this type of behavior is a fairly regular occurrence with Mr. Lemon. I have a feeling it is. I've always had a sneaking suspicion that Don Lemon's a jerk. An arrogant, self-important jerk. On top of the fact that he's a homo. On top of all that. Yeah. So we'll see. I think they'll start pouring out of the closet, so to speak. All the people who Don Lemon has offended and assaulted and otherwise insulted and annoyed at all the bars in which he's gotten hammered. Yeah. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. There is no one I would rather watch go down in flames than Don Lemon. Only because he's so arrogant and conceited and self-assured right now that there's no chance he'll ever repent of the lifestyle that is going to send him to damnation for all of eternity. So Don Lemon needs to flame out, hit bottom, and then maybe there would be some hope for the lemon-scented jerk. Thank you, boys. All right, we're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for sticking with us. So I got up on Friday, and I had a cough, and I felt that feeling that I get when I'm coming down with something, a bug, a cold or flu or some sort of upper respiratory disturbance. And so I followed the doctor's advice. Yes, I did what Michael Savage taught me to do. Started immediately dosing 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C every 4 hours. And, well, here we are on Sunday, and I have not yet to come down with this thing that I felt in my chest. But right then, just now, in between that last break, I had a cough, and I felt that again. Oh. And so I realized that today I had stopped with the dosing of the vitamin C, and maybe I need to keep that up for another day. The last thing you people want to do is hear me coughing and hacking up chunks of my lung here on the air. Nobody needs to hear that. So maybe in the break, I can impose upon my extremely attractive audio engineer to go get me some drugs. No, just some vitamin C. Is all I need. Just vitamin C. No, I can't go get it. I can't take a break. Maybe we'll make it through to the next break. All right, now, this ransomware attack in Texas, this is big news. At least 23 local government entities in the state of Texas have been taken hostage by ransomware, meaning the computers that issue the parking tickets and, I don't know, the welfare checks. What local government computer systems, what do they do? I don't know. Their computer systems have been hacked with ransomware. 23, I don't know if this is 23 municipalities. I don't know if this is 23 individual departments. I mean, in some cities in Texas, I'm sure there's 23 different departments just in the local city government. So they're not saying who it is. They don't want it to get out, probably because they're really embarrassed. They found out that, just because someone over at the DMV was downloading porn, now 23 municipalities can't issue their parking tickets or send out their fines or whatever. Can't collect their sales tax. That's the big one. The sales tax system's being held hostage. Anyway, I think it's noteworthy that this appears to be a coordinated attack by some hackers, probably a 17-year-old, right, in his stepmom's basement, holding 23 governmental departments hostage with ransomware. And we'll see if that gets worse. The only good thing is they can't collect sales tax or send anybody bills for non-existent things that the local government does. So that's something. They really need that up in San Francisco, although nobody would notice, I don't think. In San Francisco, they'd just say, hey, you go ahead and take it. You can clean up all the feces, too. How about that? The hacker's like, I don't want it. The hacker just wants money, I'm sure. Anyway. And while all that's going on, we've got hailstones falling from the sky. We've got feces all over California. Ransomware taking the government hostage. Wow. And a Swedish court has proven, or at least added to the mounting evidence that Donald Trump is a dimwit. Yes, you remember Donald Trump tweeted saying free ASAP Rocky, the rapper accused of assault in Sweden. Uh-huh. You remember that, right? I remember. I remember being embarrassed that the president of the United States would be rapping. I'm sorry, not rapping. That would be even worse. But tweeting about a gangster thug rapper. I don't even know who ASAP Rocky is. But I looked at his mug and I know what he is. He's a thug and he's a bad influence on his fellow human being is what he is. Which that's par for the course for being a hip-hop artist or a rapper. Anyway, he was in detention before trial over in Sweden accused of assault. And of course that had a bunch of other celebrities, although ASAP Rocky, I don't think he was a celebrity before this. I never heard of him. I mean, obviously I'm not down at the record store, you know, lining up in the hip hop section ever. Never have been. But I'm familiar with other hip hop artists who are actually famous. I remember thinking this might be a setup. This guy might have just grabbed someone in Sweden and beat him up so he could go to jail and make the news. And he made the news all right. Kim Kardashian, other so-called hip-hop artists, generated a petition. The petition gathered over 600,000 signatures to free ASAP Rocky, falsely accused, being held by the vicious Swedish government. You know how bad that is. Swedish jail. You know, this like the chocolate is day-old stuff. You're in the Swedish jail. Uh-huh. The French cuisine is like made by Swedish people, so it's not that great. So anyway, all these Kim Kardashian and other airhead celebrities put pressure on Donald Trump, the president of the United States. Kim Kardashian apparently has his phone number. Believe that? Can you believe that? Actually, I can believe that with Donald Trump. Yeah. So anyway, what happened, what I'm getting to is that a Swedish court has found U.S. rapper A$AP Rocky guilty of assault and convicted him to, well, nothing, because, well, in Sweden, apparently, unless you do something really, really bad, they convict you and then they don't do anything to you. Being convicted in Sweden apparently doesn't mean all that much. The court found him guilty but gave him a suspended sentence of nothing, which they suspended. We're not going to do anything to him, and we will suspend the sentence. That's not very good Swedish. That sounded more French than Swedish. Swedish, you have to be like the Bjorn, Bjorn, Bjorn. I'm not sure I can do that. I just can't do that right now. Anyway, according to this article from... this article is from Sputnik News. This is my second story from Sputnik News. This is a Russian news outlet, Sputnik News. I might need to double and triple source this story to see if it's true that A$AP Rocky was indeed convicted. No, I know he was, because the first I heard this was on ABC News on the radio, driving around. And I remember rolling my eyes saying the president of the United States actually tweeted free A$AP Rocky for a guy who ends up convicted of assault because he was guilty, because he's a thug and a lowlife is what he is. Well, Sputnik News says the musician, whose real name is Rakim. Wait a second. Stop right there, Sputnik News. Musician? This guy's not a musician. He doesn't play any instruments. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have no idea who he is. For all I know, he's the next great guitar artist. No. He's a rapper. I'm saying there's a 99.987% chance this guy doesn't play any instruments. Maybe he can play a turntable. It may be possible he's able to play an MP3, but he's not a musician. His real name is Rakim Myers. He's got a Jewish last name. How about that? I don't really have anything more to say about that, except Donald Trump is a dimwit on the level of Kim Kardashian. And other rappers. And he's in the Oval Office. He's in the White House. A man with the intellectual level of Kim Kardashian. And if I could think of a rapper off the top of my head, I would throw a rapper's name in there. But I can't really think of one off the top of my head.
Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice. Vanilla Ice. I don't know about... I almost had one there, the one with all the tattoos.
Which one?
Well, Lil Wayne. That's what I was going to say. That's a much less dated reference than Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice is a rapper?
Vanilla Ice is, I think he's... Vanilla Ice was as much of a musician as any of these guys. as Lil Wayne or... A$AP Rockhead or whatever he wants to call himself. All right. Meanwhile, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. You guys are familiar with these two? Muslim. What are they? Congress persons. They're Muslim congressmen. Because you can say congressman and it can mean a woman, because man, the term man, that encompasses male and female. In the English language, just so you people know. You don't have to say congresswoman. You can just say she's a congressman. Anyway, but we don't. We say they're congresswomen. And we call Rashida Tlaib. Even though her name is obviously Tlaib. Tlaib, I said. From Palestine. She's from Palestine. Her grandmother still lives there. They were denied entry by the state of Israel. They were told, you're not welcome here. Which is awesome. I think that's great. And I don't think it really had anything to do with Donald Trump tweeting about it. I think the wheels have probably been turning on this for quite some time. But Donald Trump, being an egomaniac and wanting to make everything about himself, he tweeted about it just before the decision was announced publicly because he's a jerk. That's why. Because he is a fame-starved. He's incredibly famous, one of the most famous people on the planet, but he doesn't feel like people are paying enough attention to him. Mm-hmm. That's Donald Trump. He has a voracious appetite for celebrity, and he wants to be involved in everything because he's an egomaniacal, well, I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, people think that Donald Trump was the first guy to come up with the idea of making up cute names for people, like his latest one, Sleepy Joe, for Joe Biden. Well, I did this long before Donald Trump did, long before. I was the one who called Johnny Walker, the terrorist, the American Taliban, I called him Johnny Walker Black before Donald Trump had ever made up a cutesy name for anybody. And I'm gonna rename Ilhan Omar. From now going forward, Ilhan Omar will be referred to on the Weekly Worldview as Ilham Omar. We're gonna put ham right in the middle of her name. That's right, a big chunk of pork right in the middle of her Islamic moniker. That's what we're gonna do. Ilham Omar. H-A-M as in Mike. Thank you very much. And then Rashida Tlaib going forward. Here on the Weekly Worldview, at least, where, you know, nothing else really matters except what's happening here. Rashida Tlaib will formally be referred to as Rashiite Tlaib. Rashiite is, that's, but we'll go with Tlaib because Tlaib is so hard to pronounce because it's, I don't know, she probably made that up whenever she somehow managed to flim-flam her way out of Palestine into the United States. She's probably made that one up. So Rashiite Tlaib and Ilham Omar, not welcome in the state of Israel. Thank you very much to the state of Israel for denying entry to two people who want to destroy your country. I think you should have the right, if people openly advocate the destruction of your country, at the very least, you should be able to keep them out. At the very best, the very best would have been if they would have let him in and then arrested them. First things first, we're gonna change the rules. Better listen up, all you boys and girls. Your prayer says there'll be no after school. So vote for me, that will not be cool. Yeah, 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 yeah. And now I know there's trouble in the Middle East. I spend all my money when I stop the arms race. All my brothers in the desert gonna have themselves a feast. When that's gone, then we'll start a world peace. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. It's good to be back with you, and it's good to have all you here with us as we come to you from the bowels of the McBurney compound here in the boiler room. That's right. We're having an update on the bird whisper, the sparrow that was rescued. How long ago was this now? This is almost 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
When the sparrow, well, there's two, four originally. Only one survived. All rescued by the bird whisperer. One of them now has survived and will survive. I might have said that last week because I was pretty sure about it last week. But here's what this sparrow does now. Now, this is a wild animal, okay? This sparrow spends the day hanging out in our front yard in one of three or four trees that we have. And then regularly, the bird whisperer goes out onto the front porch and calls the bird by name. Calls the bird by name. The bird flies from the tree to the bird whisperer's finger, perches, and then the bird whisperer feeds the bird. And then the bird flies back and hangs out all day. And then comes home at night to sleep in a cage in the bird whisperer's room. That's where we are with the... So I've never seen anyone call a wild bird by name and have that bird come and land on your finger. And I know that the bird only wants food. Don't get me wrong. I'm not naive or superstitious, or I don't think there's anything magical going on. It's just that I've never observed anything quite so remarkable is what it is. It's remarkable. And I will, I think I'll post another picture of the bird whisperer feeding the bird so that you can all get a load of that because, well, I'd like you to observe it too, just because I find it, well, I find it remarkable. Okay. I think I've already said that. Okay. Now, speaking of remarkable, Jeffrey Epstein had a portrait of Bill Clinton hanging in his Upper East Side townhouse. Have you seen this? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. You haven't seen this? Okay. So we know the picture actually exists. It's a painting by, it's called Parsing Bill, and it's the painting by an Australian artist whose name I'm not going to give because I don't really, it's really weird, and she's probably weird. So why give her any, why give her anything, right? What I meant was, why give her any celebrity or any attention? Or there's a word I'm looking for, but you know I'm not finding it. Is what's happening, and so I'm noticing that this happens to me more and more the older I get. It's words that I've used. They've been part of the lexicon since I was 5 years old, and now they've escaped. They've vanished in thin air. They're hidden from me. It's as if someone's covered them up with a heavy black tarp, and I just can't get it off. It happens on a daily basis anymore. And I think it's part of the decline into dementia and Alzheimer's that I'm sure I'm going to experience. I can see that one coming, right? I mean, I could feel it right then when I said, why should I give this alleged artist any... I still haven't found the word that I was looking for. So if you people could help, maybe we should start taking calls just so people can help me find words that I... Anyway, this Australian-American artist painted this painting called Parsing Bill. It depicts Bill Clinton lounging on a chair in the Oval Office, wearing red heels, posing suggestively in a blue dress, redolent of Monica Lewinsky. You remember the blue dress, right? That whole thing. It's that one we will never forget, the whole blue dress. So apparently Epstein had this picture. This isn't really about Epstein, by the way, either. It was just the astonishing image of Bill Clinton in the middle of the Drudge Report half the week. Basically dressed in drag in a blue dress. And yeah. And then, to top that, if you people haven't seen the painting, I'll link to the article so you can see the painting. But I'll just warn you, it's kind of creepy. You'll feel like you need a shower after you look at that thing. The dress, according to, who is this? This is from the Daily Mail over in the United Kingdom. The dress is also strikingly similar to one worn by Hillary Clinton at the 2009 Kennedy Center Honors. So here's the thing about these really rich, really famous, really powerful people like Jeff Epstein, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton. So they're sexual deviants and perverts, right? And creeps. And annoying, I'm sure. And arrogant. They're right up there with Don Lemon, right? They bar hopping with Don Lemon would work with these folks, right? So Jeff Epstein keeps this picture of Bubba Bill Jeff in his apartment. Now, Epstein and Bubba are friends, or were friends. They used to molest women together, girls even. And so Jeff keeps this painting in his apartment, and then Hillary wears a blue dress that looks almost exactly like the Monica Lewinsky blue dress. She wears it to an event because these people have no shame. They revel in their immorality and their filth. They love it. Jeff loves that about Bill. That's one of the endearing things about Bill to Jeff. is that he's a deviant and a pervert, a lot like Jeff. And Hillary's right there with him. Hillary wears the blue dress. I mean, if I'm Hillary Clinton, I'll never wear a blue dress as long as I live ever in public because of what my husband did. But she has no shame. Doesn't bother her. She thinks it's probably pretty cool. I mean, obviously her and Bill were not really together, if you know what I mean, at the time in the White House. So she could probably care less who Bill was interviewing in that little room off the Oval Office. All right, let's just move on, because that's a creepy story. Al Gore. Well, here, listen to this. Do you guys remember Al Gore was confronted about his prediction that he made in his book? He made a prediction in 2006 that we were going to reach a point of no return within 10 years. He said this in 2006, right? Well, about 2 years ago, he was asked about it. He was asked about it on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. And Chris asked him, after your movie, An Inconvenient Truth, came out in 2006, you made the following comments as part of your publicity for the movie. You said unless we took drastic measures, the world would reach a point of no return within 10 years. Weren't you wrong? Unquote. That's an actual tape from the Chris Wallace there. Now, back then, this is 2017, Gore kind of dodged the question. He said, well, we have seen a decline in emissions on a global basis. For the first time, they've stabilized, started to decline. So some of the response for the last 10 years have helped. But unfortunately and regrettably, a lot of serious damage has been done. That's what Al Gore said back in 2017. Now, he was asked about it just last week. Now, let's see. On ABC News, Jonathan Carl asked him, hey, you remember the prediction in 06? Well, guess what? It's almost 2020. Is it already too late? Says Jonathan Carl. And Gore basically says, yes, it's too late. He says, well, some changes, unfortunately, have already been locked in place. Sea level increases are going to continue no matter what we do now. But, here's the good news about that point of no return. We can prevent much higher sea level increases, much more rapid increases in temperature, if you'll just send me money to my charity. Help me gas up my plane. I'll go around, I'll solve this. And the good news, folks, the Democratic presidential nominees, the candidates, I'm sorry, did I say nominee? I meant candidate. The candidates all agree this is either their top issue or one of their top two issues. The other one, of course, being molesting young girls. When I get to lose it all, security run through the wall. Future dreams we have to realize. A thousand skeptic hands won't keep us from the things we plan. Unless we're clinging to the things we prize. And do you feel scared? I do, but I won't stop and falter. And if we throw it all away, it's gonna make it better. Whoa, 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 whoa. Cha-ching today as though it was the last, the final. All right, this guy's been getting way too much airplay on the show lately. We don't do keyboard stuff. All right, let's. Oh, by the way, I blew it. You know, I'm a little off my game today. I want to thank the crack production staff here at the Weekly Worldview for making that Al Gore story available to me from the science. Really? File. That was Al Gore recording it. He should do our introduction for the science. Science. Really? File. But we'll move on from Al Gore and all of that. to the number one job in America. According to MarketWatch, the number one job, this is based on millions of reviews left on Glassdoor.com. They've released a study. It's a list of jobs with great career opportunities. Number one is tax manager. Tax manager is the top job. They says it has the strongest career opportunities rating because tax avoidance is an industry, ladies and gentlemen. The United States tax code and tax burden has become so onerous and complex that there's an entire industry around avoiding taxes, and people are becoming rich in that industry. So that is a sign that the tax system is disastrous. When you have an entire industry devoted to avoiding paying taxes, and people in that industry are getting rich every day, that's bad. But that's where we are. That's right. People are getting rich, helping rich people and companies legally avoid taxes. That's just a sign of the times, right? It's a mile marker on the highway to hell that you've got an industry around. All right. I just filed my taxes, okay? So I'm a little annoyed. I don't even want to get into how much I paid, but it was an extraordinary sum of money. Extraordinary. And you know what my accountant told me? He said, next year you can look forward to paying even more. That's just great. Maybe I need to hire one of these smart kids over in the tax avoidance industry. Help me avoid some taxes. Nah, I'll just pay him. I'll just make more out of spite. How about that? Hey, spite can work for, you know, it's a motivation. It's one of them. All right. Now, from the Shut Up and Eat file, that's right, I said the Shut Up and Eat file. Shut Up and Eat was one of my dad's favorite sayings. I think he said that at least one time during every dinner that we ate together to at least one of his children. From the Shut Up and Eat file, we're going to talk about orthorexia. Have you heard of this one, he said, to his extremely attractive audio engineers. Orthorexia is an obsession with clean eating. Uh-huh. That's right. Now, you have friends and associates in your life who are probably, and here's the thing about orthorexia, it's an obsession with not eating anything that's not good, as defined by the person eating it. And we all have people like this in our lives. They're the ones who suggest Thai whenever it's time to go out. That's the person. Some mental health professionals want orthorexia nervosa to be classified as an actual mental disorder. Yeah. So these are people, okay, I'll clue you in, okay? These are people who have a pathological fixation on eating foods that they decide are pure. Uh-huh. They shun things like sugar, carbs, dairy, meat products, animal products, gluten, starch, pesticides, herbicides, anything that isn't natural, organic. Uh-huh. So I wonder if they avoid feces. Feces are natural and organic from what I understand. Well, that's right. The feces in San Francisco are tainted with narcotics. So, oh no, they not just natural and organic, but clean. What they decide is clean. Okay. Nothing GMO. You don't want any of that stuff. That's not clean. That's filthy, dirty, nasty. According to one new paper on the subject, orthorexia is a cyber pathology. Walk with me on this. This is hilarious. The research... I almost can't say this. The researcher calls orthorexia nervosa a digitally transmitted condition of privilege. I love it. It's, you know what it is? It's because these... Most of us, we've never been hungry. We don't even know what it means to be hungry. We're trying to not eat so much, right? Most of us. And so eventually you can get so far gone because we are enormously privileged. I mean, let's just all admit it, you know, but you can go off on a tangent and start, I don't know, it's like you want to punish yourself for having so much good food available. So you start cutting yourself off from all the foods Digitally transmitted condition of privilege. Yes, he calls it a cyber pathology. He says orthorexia lures the digital flaneurs in search of non-conventional health advice and colonizes their imagination with promises and cajoling, with promises and cajoling content. Sage dietary and living advice proliferate in unknown numbers, evangelizing the populace into the gospel of health. And that means no gluten, no dairy, no sugar. No. I'm pure, you see. He says social media are the vectors of both transmission and recovery for orthorexia nervosa. Yes. And then the author reminds us that Gwyneth Paltrow is one of these. Uh-huh. Gwyneth Paltrow is maybe the high priestess of the orthorexia nervosa movement. She promotes what she calls super clean eating. Super clean. I'm not. I know you're clean. I'm super clean. Super clean eating. No alcohol, no caffeine, no dairy. No tomatoes, no eggplant, no processed foods, no red meat or other toxic triggers. Toxic triggers. What does that mean? She's a toxic trigger. Anyway, now listen to this. This may surprise you folks if you've hung around people like this. The no gluten, no dairy, no meat, nothing. You know these people, right? You know who I'm talking about. Uh-huh. What do you guys want to eat? Can we get Thai? Uh-huh. Immediately smack that person. So this may surprise you, but there's an element, according to the author, according to this author, there is an element of self-righteousness to orthorexia. Yes, no surprise. Way. Uh-huh. Orthorexics resort to an iron self-discipline bolstered by a hefty sense of superiority over those who eat junk food. So, yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's, I have observed that. Okay, now I've never observed a wild bird being called by name, landing on a human's finger, and then being fed. That I never observed until this week. But this I've been observing for about 10 years now. The orthorexics out there. Just leave me alone with my cheeseburger, all right? I know it's going to kill me. The last thing I need to hear is about how bad it's going to kill me, all right? All right, now let's go to the politics file. Where there is obviously a plot against U.S. Representative Steve King. And I'm not that familiar with Mr. King, but I have rarely seen someone's statements so horribly wrenched out of context and used to bludgeon someone politically as what I just read in the Des Moines Register this past week, where Steve King was giving a speech in which he was defending his position of not allowing exceptions for rape and incest when they want to kill babies. So he's been trying to pass legislation to just ban all abortion. I mean, that's what the article says. I haven't read the legislation. I don't want to get into that. But he says he's against all abortion, even in the case of rape and incest, which that's my position. So he's been introducing this legislation to ban abortion with no exceptions, and Republican leadership has prevented the bills from advancing through the House. Who prevented them? The Republican leadership, that's right. Not the Democrats, the Republicans blocked Steve King from getting a vote on a bill to ban abortion without exceptions. Why? Because the Republicans are a bunch of pro-aborts and creeps, and they don't want to ban all abortion without exceptions. They want exceptions for when they need to get one. Mm-hmm. Or procure one, I guess I should say. Anyway, so the GOP hierarchy, they don't like Representative Steve King. So there's obviously a plot to get rid of him. He's even said so. So he gives a speech in which he says, here's the headline. U.S. Representative Steve King says, if not for rape and incest, would there be any population left? All right, that's the headline. If not for rape and incest, would there be any population left? So that's the most misleading headline I've read this year. Completely deceptive. What Steve King said was, if we went back, quote, what if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled those people out that were the products of rape and incest? considering all the wars and all the rapes and pillages that have taken place throughout human history, I know I can't even certify that I'm not a product of a rape or an incest somewhere along the line. Unquote. That's what Steve King actually said. But the news media, the deviant perverts, the creeps and the queers and the weirdos who write the news, the child molesters, so they totally wrench it out of context. And then the Republicans are piling on Steve King, telling him it's time for him to resign. When all he's saying is, and here's what he says toward the end of the article. He says, it's not the baby's fault for the sin of the father. Huh, how about that? Or the mother. So that seems very logical and sensible to me, that you shouldn't kill someone because their father's a criminal. And Steve King said that, and I agree with him. And he shouldn't resign. All right. Condemnation has been pouring in from Democrats as well as Republicans against Steve King for just stating the truth. If you state the truth, all of the enemies of the truth will have their knives out for you, and many of those knives will be in the hands of Republican politicians. All right? All right. How much time we got left? Okay, we're almost out of time. From the Queering of America file, this is a creepy, creepy story, folks, and this is a story that creeped me out when I first heard about it. You remember back in 2002 when Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped from her home? And we all assumed that she had been murdered, of course. But she was found about a year later, and she was found walking down a street. And she had been held captive by her kidnappers for almost a year, only 5 miles from her own house. I remember the story was just astonishing. But the one thing I always suspected from the beginning, and I don't know if I ever said this on the air because I never had any hard evidence, but I was always suspicious that it was something and someone that her father was involved with that put her in harm's way. Because that guy struck me as a homo. That's all, okay? I always thought this guy is a homo. Some kind of sexual deviant creep. That's what I always suspected. I don't know if I ever told anyone outside of my extremely attractive audio engineer. I don't know if I ever told anyone else how I felt about that. Well, Elizabeth Smart was the victim, right? Her father's name is Ed Smart. He's come out as a homo, and he's divorcing his wife. Yesterday, he came out as a homo. And he's divorcing his wife, but he says he's not leaving her for someone else. He's divorcing her in the interest of fairness. All right, so just color me even more suspicious of Ed Smart, of having somehow, because of someone he was involved with or something he was involved with back in 2002, he somehow put his daughter in harm's way. That is what I'm suggesting, and that's what I've suspected all along. And now we know that he's a deviant pervert. Queer. All right. Meanwhile, now let's go before we run out of time. I want to go to the hero file. That's right. A Russian pilot successfully crash landed a passenger plane. He successfully crash landed a passenger plane in a cornfield. Did you get this? The plane takes off, right, from Zhukovsky Airport at about 6 o'clock in the morning and promptly sucks birds into both engines. This is like right out of the Miracle on the Hudson, right? Both engines fail completely, and the captain radios the airport, asks if he can circle around and make an emergency landing. They gave him permission, but he never made it back. He was forced to ditch the aircraft in a cornfield about a mile short of the runway. He brought the plane down, folks, with no power in either engine and with the landing gear retracted in a cornfield. Wow, this guy will be a hero in Russian history for eternity. This guy, that's amazing, just flat out amazing. All right, now that I've done that great story, I really don't want to do these others. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk about the Palestinians. I don't want to talk about the perverts in the public schools sending pictures to the. I don't want to talk about deep fakes. I don't want to talk about the Supreme Court. Folks, there's just nothing left. You can't top that story. That's all. The guy landed belly flopped. belly flopped an airplane with 150 people on it. He belly flops it in a cornfield, and everybody's fine. You know, you got a couple of people with some bumps and bruises. And, you know, he probably had to change his shorts. But other than that, everybody's in pretty good shape. That's just amazing. I mean, a cornfield. Does corn have some sort of... Because, like, with Sully Sullenberger, when you saw that happen, you could kind of relate because he landed in the water. You know, you're like, okay, I mean, this guy's a really good pilot. He's really lucky he was over the Hudson River, right? This guy's dizzy in a cornfield. It's just amazing. I'll tell you what, people are amazing, and the things people do are amazing and remarkable, and it's interesting to be alive. I caught an atheist comment the other day about, hey, none of us asked to be here. And I thought, man, what a sad life you have. What do you mean none of us asked to be here? I mean, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else, and I just thank God and my mom and dad for the opportunity to be here. And I hope you do the same. And I hope you thank God first. All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio. That's right. And at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.